This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK5.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 94, A Futuristic Brady Bunch. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including new details on the TNG Season 4 Blu-rays, Matt Ferguson's alternate posters for the TOS films, some new Star Trek checks, Paramount's Where's Scotty promotion and new Into Darkness clips, and we reveal which buttons we'd want on our captain's chairs. Then in the feature, we're joined by Colin Higgins and Laurie Sears to discuss the Voyager episode, Real Life. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Char. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good, Chris. Spring has finally arrived in Fargo. At the very end of April, no less. And now that things have finally thawed out, it is flood season, which happens pretty much every year here. The Red River, which separates North Dakota from Minnesota, that's the border, it likes to flood every single year. And Fargo has made the news a couple times with epic floods. They had one in 97, they had one in 2009. This year, we're not going to break any records, but it's still pretty high. I think the record crest is somewhere around 40 feet. We're expected to hit 37. So we, at the moment, have a bunch of people stacking a million sandbags along the river to protect housing that's nearby.
Okay. Well, stacking sandbags is kind of a typical response to potential flood. But let me ask you, what would Captain Janeway do to combat the possibility of a flood?
I'm pretty sure she would just punch her way through and then drink some coffee, contemplate it in her ready room, and then, yeah.
You don't think she would, like, send Tom Paris into the middle of the flood in a raft or something like that?
Oh, that's true. She very well might. And you know that Tom would volunteer to explore it himself.
Of course.
Yeah. Why don't I take the raft out and see what I can find? And then, of course, he's going to just get sucked into the river. He's going to flow downstream. We're not going to be able to see or hear him. We don't know where he's at. Dilemma.
You know, this sounds a lot like the B-plot to the episode we're going to talk about in the feature today, Real Life.
It does.
Except with water.
Yeah. Well, you know, the first big flood was in 97, which is the year that this episode aired.
Well, there you go.
Connection?
Conspiracy theorists start.
Maybe.
Your warp cores.
I'm thinking that there's definitely something to this.
I think
you're onto them, Chris.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, I know how you feel about spring. It's finally, you know, kind of the same here. As you can probably tell from my voice, my throat isn't doing all that well this week, but we will try to plow through. It's our big holiday week here in Japan, also known as Golden Week, where we have lots of holidays just all stacked together to make a pretty much a vacation week for the entire country.
And, that sounds
so
great.
So that rolls around every May. And it's golden, what can we say?
It does sound pretty golden.
I'm going to spend the first day of Golden Week talking to you about Star Trek news. And the first item that we have up is one that I think everyone is very excited about, especially coming off of last week's Best of Both Worlds theatrical event in the U.S. And these are some new details about the TNG Season 4 Blu-ray sets, as well as a trailer for the season.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've not seen this trailer yet, give it a watch. It's absolutely beautiful. It made me very excited for the Season 4 Blu-ray, and I'm just glad they're keeping right on going with these things, especially after all the hype, as you said, with Best of Both Worlds in the theaters. I personally was not able to go. The closest one to me was 3 hours away. Couldn't do that on a Thursday night, But I heard really good things from people that did go. The theaters were full, sometimes packed, and people had a great time.
Yeah, I saw that some theaters had to actually add screens at the last minute just to accommodate the demand for the showing. And
that's fantastic.
It's amazing. I mean, this is a series that's 25 years old, an episode that every Star Trek fan has seen dozens of times, I'm sure. I can't imagine that there are many people who have not seen The Best of Both Worlds at least half a dozen times, because it's just such the iconic episode in all of Star Trek. And
yes,
still everyone's pouring out to the theaters to see this. So,
yeah,
a fantastic event. You mentioned that, yes, they are continuing to plow through the production. And as I think back to very old Ready Room episodes, when we first found out that they were going to remaster TNG on Blu-ray, and we had a lot of speculation back then about what the release schedule would be like, because obviously it's a lot of work. It's a really big project that they're undertaking.
Oh, yeah.
At the same time, you can't take 7 years to release the Blu-ray sets because your audience is going to lose interest. I mean, from a marketing standpoint, it's just an approach that you can't take.
Right.
But still, we didn't know.
Enough.
Like, are we going to get, you know, 2 sets per year? Are we going to get 3 sets per year? Well, season 4 right now is slated to be released in July, probably in the first half of the month, from what I'm hearing. And we're just now going to get season 3, well, the day that this episode of The Ready Room drops on April 30th. That's the release date. So we're looking at roughly 3 months. So that gives us 4 sets per year. This is already season 4 in July. So what would that put us? You know, probably season 7 should be coming out early spring of next year. So that would be over the course of less than a year and a half, we would have gotten the entire run of The Next Generation on Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. And I think very reasonable, like you said. Too slow of a release, nobody's going to care. But at the same time, you want them to put in the TLC that's going to make it worth the purchase, because even at Amazon's best prices, which we've seen recently, I mean, they had something like 60% off last week on the Blu-rays as well as the DVDs, and that put the Blu-rays at something ridiculously cheap.
Well, the lowest price that I've seen on the Blu-rays at Amazon has been $52.49.
Okay,
and
that's what that must have been.
That's quite a steal. Well, there have been a number of different low prices, and the lowest one has been $52.49.
Okay.
So we did want to remind everyone, keep your eyes open on Amazon if you want to get these Blu-rays, because the price fluctuates a lot. And if you keep your eye on it every day, you can actually catch it at a really low price.
Right. And if you do the pre-order thing, don't worry if the retail price says an ungodly amount. It will go down. Without a doubt.
It always goes down right before release, and they will give you the lowest price. And, oh, I got an email from Amazon the other day. I had pre-ordered Star Trek the video game when it was first released for pre-order.
Mm-hmm.
And the price came down by 3 cents. And
Ooh.
I actually got the email from them that says, thanks to the low price guarantee, you have saved 3 cents on your purchase. Of Star
Amazing!
Trek, like, hot damn, all right, I did it.
I'm
going to run out, grab myself a piece of bubble gum. I don't know, what can I get with 3 cents these days?
I don't think you can get anything for 3 cents anymore. I think bubble gum is 5 cents.
Probably.
So, keep still saving those 3 pennies.
Yeah. But yeah, it's great that they're getting these things out to us quickly. And at the same time, I'm really impressed with the work that's going into it to get them out so quickly, because this is a lot of work that these people are doing to remaster this, and it's very impressive that they're able to do this for us in such quick time.
Yeah, and of course, there's going to be extras. There's going to be brand new multi-part documentary, which I'm kind of interested in. I'm not entirely sure what that's about. Audio commentaries, of course, some deleted scenes, and my personal favorite, the gag reel. because that's always fun.
Yeah, I think the multi-part documentary, from what you can see in the trailer, there are some scenes with Patrick Stewart sitting, you know, talking about how he continued to be amazed at the audience reception to the show. There's some scenes with Brent Spiner talking about how Data is a group effort. You know, it's not just him as Data. It reminded me a bit, of course, of what we've been already getting and some of the sit-downs that I've seen on the Enterprise Blu-ray sets, you know, with Brandon Braga, with Scott Bakula, and so forth. And I love these. That's one reason, besides wanting the picture quality, it's one reason that I keep buying these sets over and over, is because I just love hearing from the actors and the creatives.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like this set is also going to have a special art department kind of reunion with Herman Zimmerman and Doug Drexler, the Okudas. That's going to be very cool.
That's some of the most interesting stuff that you can get on here too, because of course the actors, you see them at conventions and those videos come out and you hear a lot of these stories, but the behind the scenes people, getting them all together where they can really talk candidly with each other about the experience that they had, is something that you don't get as often.
And I think that alone will make this worth it.
Yeah. So this is going to be coming out in July, and the packaging has been released as well. It's kind of a deep green, which is different than the original DVD sets, which had that sort of Voyager DS9 science teal, when the science blue had actually become a teal. Mm-hmm. That's the color that was used on the original DVD set, so they're not following exactly the same color pattern.
Yeah, I'd say this is much brighter, more of an emerald green.
Yeah, this is a much brighter one. So that looks quite nice. And for those who are concerned about the visual effects, they are being done by a studio called Modern Video. So, you know, the concerns of like the back and forth between CBS Digital and an outside studio, which is necessary in order to maintain this release schedule. The concerns over season two, where things were just quite not up to snuff compared to what CBS Digital is doing, have been alleviated with the work of Modern Video. It all seems to be great, and so I think we're going to get that quality that we're expecting. So we'll put links to information about this over at TrekCore, as well as the Season 4 trailer in the show notes, and you can go check it out. So moving on, Char, you and I both appreciate great art and great design. And we've talked about on here before artist Matt Ferguson, who did the alternate poster for Star Trek Into Darkness, which is not an official poster, but I think it should be. He's been doing a thing with the site called ChromeYellow.com. And on ChromeYellow.com, an author who goes by the name SALG, I'm not positive if it's pronounced Salg or it's just SALG. But this author is going through and reviewing the original series movies, and then Matt is creating new alternate posters. And the posters for the motion picture, The Wrath of Khan, The Search for Spock, and The Voyage Home have all been released, and I've got them here. Now tell me, what are your impressions of these posters?
The first impression when I see either one of these individually or as a group, I think, oh my gosh, how beautiful. They capture the essence of the film in a way we've not seen in the other movie posters. They're just gorgeous looking. You know, I'm kind of speechless. I really like to just take a moment and get them in and take it, or rather take in just how wonderfully done they are. Like you said, we're both design geeks. We love this kind of stuff. You see the impeccable technique at work, but it's also just something really nice to look at. And I think, man, I really want these hanging up in my office.
I would like to have that too. I would love to have full size prints of these posters and have them hanging in there. You know, I love the way that Matt picks specific themes or moments from the films. And I love in particular the Star Trek III poster. Because for me, the most memorable scene in that film is Kirk destroying the Enterprise and then Bones and Scotty and Kirk standing on the planet looking up, and the Enterprise coming down through the atmosphere in flames.
Oh, man.
And
yeah.
I know some people don't like the fact that they destroyed the Enterprise in that film, but I thought it was just that moment where it summed up so much about Kirk. And
yes,
he had lost Spock, and now he's losing his ship, which possibly the two things that Kirk loves more than anything were the Enterprise and Spock as mm-hmm. a brother, in a sense. And Matt's poster here has Spock's head, of course, with his eyes closed. It's Spock being dead, and then the Enterprise coming down through the rusty sky. And then mm-hmm. on the poster, we just have Bones and Kirk standing looking up. But it's such a touching scene, and it's
it
captured
really
so
is.
Well.
And I love the way Spock just kind of comes out through the sky. The gradient of color is also just really beautiful. A lot of variety in coloring. And what I love is it kind of takes like one iconic or maybe two iconic things from the movie and then embodies the message of the movie into this one little poster. It says so much.
Yeah, the simplicity of the scenes, absolutely. Especially mm-hmm. when you look at like the posters that we're getting, the official posters that we're getting for Into Darkness, which are becoming, I mean, are there like 47 of them now? How many are there? It's just out of control.
Yeah.
How many posters they're releasing. And I get it, again, from a marketing and branding standpoint, I get it. But, they're taking stills from the movie and they're putting some Photoshop effects over the stills and they're slapping the name on and they're releasing them as posters.
Right.
And I love what Matt's doing here, where it's an actual artistic view of the movie and the message
yes.
of the movie. And I hope that at least for the Blu-ray release, I'm really hoping that Paramount will pick up Matt's Into Darkness poster and actually make that, cover art for the 3-disc Blu-ray set or something like that, because it really deserves to be used.
That would be fantastic, yeah. Because like you said, the Into Darkness official release posters, just about anybody who knows Photoshop could do that. You just slap them together and then boom, it's out.
Yeah, I mean, I could create every one of those posters myself. Give me 20 minutes with the steel
exactly.
and Photoshop, and I could have a finished poster done.
Right. So. But with Matt Ferguson's work here on any of these movie posters, there's a lot of thought that went into them, and you can tell. That's the difference.
Yeah, most definitely. So if you want to check these out, the next one is going up on May 3rd, and that would be Star Trek V. And then, of course, 6 will follow. They're doing the 6 original series films. And also, you can read the reviews. It's kind of like a look back at the movie that's being written
yeah.
to go along with these posters. And we'll have links to all 4 of the ones that are currently out on the show notes page for this episode at trek.fm/TRR94. And go check those out. It's fantastic stuff.
Indeed.
Now, Char, this next story kind of made me laugh a little bit. So why don't you explain what's going on here?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, when was the last time that you sent a paper check?
Well, I moved to Japan 17 years ago, and we don't use checks at all in Japan. We don't have a checking system here. It's just not a way that we pay for anything. So for me personally, I haven't written a check since I was in university back in the early 90s in the United States.
Wow.
But how about
okay.
you, though? You live in the U.S. When was the last time you wrote a paper check?
The last time I wrote a paper check was probably last year, and we would write a paper check for our rent before we moved into our house, and that was it. It was the one paper check we would use all month long. I mean, if you looked in the backlog, October's rent, November's rent, December's rent, that's all we ever use paper checks for. So I was a little baffled with this news item where there are now a couple of new designs by Checks in the Mail. That is the company. And they are making Star Trek checks and covers and address labels. this feels incredibly early 90s and prior to me.
Well, it absolutely does. And I'm going to hold something up here. The listeners won't be able to see this, but I'm holding this up for you. From Star Trek Communicator.
I remember these.
Grandio Company. Everyone remembers the Anthony Grandio Company, right?
Yes. I wanted those when I was growing up. I didn't have a checking account, but I saw those checks and I really wanted them.
Well, I had them. I was in university at this time.
And so nice.
I actually used to order my checks from the Anthony Grandio Company, and I had the Star Trek checkbook cover, and I had the Star Trek checks, and I loved them.
Yeah, cool. Well, and if I wrote any checks, I would get these, but I don't know the last time I even checked or even touched the checkbook. That said, I mean, these are still kind of cool for those that do write a paper check. You can get like a classic theme. It's got Kirk and Spock, Scotty, the whole cast, and then the Enterprise. Or you can get your lineup of captains on your checks. You can get the ships as a series. And then something they call colorful quags.
Yeah, these are like cartoonish sketches, stylistically, of the characters. And I don't know, I guess it reminds me vaguely of Powerpuff Girls, maybe? I don't know. A little bit, but...
Maybe so.
What I find interesting here, too, is... And again, it's not to belittle the product or anything. I just found it very odd to be announcing. It was like I was sucked through some kind of rift in space-time, and I was thrown back to the 1990s because I had Star Trek checks, and I just felt that checks had kind of died out. I mean, am I wrong in thinking that in the United States now, when you go into a lot of stores, like, I don't know about Walmart or Target or places, that they actually don't really accept checks, or at least they really discourage you from writing paper checks?
Yeah, if anything, they discourage you. But a lot of places nowadays simply will not take a personal check. You have to have, if you have cash, they might take your cash. But more often than not, I mean, it's kind of a reversal. It used to be that there weren't a whole lot of credit card machines around. Now every place takes plastic and nobody's taking a paper check.
Yeah. And see, for us here, we're primarily a cash society. And so typically you're going to pay cash or electronic money, which... I always find interesting when I listen to tech shows and I read news from the United States and they talk about e-money and electronic wallets and how, well, it's not really an important feature for the iPhone to have and this and that. Like, well, actually, outside of the United States, it is, because e-money is really big here. You know, if I go get a drink in the convenience store, I'm going to tap my little e-money card over the little thing to get it.
I think that's going to change here. It's not as popular as it is, say, in Japan, but I think with so many people nowadays using their debit cards to pay for things,
well,
this is just the next step.
Anyway, I was surprised. Like, I felt like this. I saw this item and I thought, okay, this is a new story or this is an, I don't know what's going on here. So, but if you do write checks and you want to have Star Trek checks, they are selling these 100 in a box, starting at $29.99. They do have matching address labels available, which I think started around $7.99, I believe it was, for that. And you can get these. But I do wonder, I felt like this is sort of them pulling some old stuff out and re-releasing it, because there's no Enterprise anything here. It's TOS, TNG, DS9, Voyager. There's nothing Enterprise, and even the Anthony Grandio Company used to have Enterprise checks.
So it's almost like you take a step back in a way.
There's no love for Archer here. No love for Trip. No cheese for Porthos.
Oh, and see, that is the check that I would want. I would want Porthos on my checks. They just lost my business. Aw. I'm kidding.
All right. But if you want to check them out, we will put a link in the show notes and you can go over and see that. And, you know, I did check. The Anthony Grandio Company website is still online. It doesn't look like it's been refreshed in about 15 years from a design standpoint. And I couldn't tell. I actually was checking because I was wondering whether he's still selling the checks or not. And I couldn't really tell if the website's live or not. The copyright notice, the last date on the copyright notice is like 1999. So I don't know.
Hmm.
I'm assuming the site is still just online and you cannot actually get checks from him anymore. But I don't know.
Hmm.
About that.
Well, if anybody has ordered checks from them recently, maybe they could write in and tell us.
Yeah, yeah, let us know. Because I'm actually really curious because I used to always get my checks from the Anthony Grandio company and get the Star Trek ones. So I am kind of curious. But until then, let's move on to the next one. Now, this is a big question that I have for you, Char.
All right, bring it.
Well, on Twitter the other day, StarTrek.com asked, which buttons would you want on your captain's chair? Now, of course, I immediately responded that Tanya and I would most definitely want to have an airlock button on the captain's chair.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. But I wanted to know, what buttons would you put on your captain's chair, Char?
Okay, well, first off, I agree that airlock needs to come standard equipped with every captain's chair, along with, say, like a button for security and maybe, you know, call the medics. Yeah, I think that's just... Oh, shipwide intercom might be another good one to have standard equip. But I came up with a couple others that I think I would want personally if I were captain. They would need to custom design this for me. First off, there's got to be a button for coffee. Have a yeoman okay. or somebody bring me a cup of coffee. I'm sure that was on Janeway's console, and I would want
that as
well.
Is it labeled like percolate underneath? Is that
it's just like a little icon for cream, with a mug sugar? And steam coming off.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then I press that and 5 seconds later here it comes. So that's good. I would need that if I were captain.
It would be brought to you in a Dixie cup, right?
Well, depending on which time period I'm in, yes. If I'm in the TOS era, yes, it's Dixie cups. Otherwise,
do you think
if it's
when Janeway became an admiral, do you think she had like a coffee IV installed in her office where she could just like stick it in her arm while she's working?
I bet you that the doctor just finally caved and gave her the coffee hypo spray.
Better yet. You know how admirals, they like to customize their uniforms, as we always talk about.
Yeah,
right here.
Yeah.
I bet that Admiral Janeway had the Starfleet School of Fashion design an admiral uniform for her that was just one gigantic caffeine patch.
Oh, hey. Yeah, just a full-on bodysuit? That's what she's wearing underneath that jacket.
And her big giant admiral's belt buckle, if you push a little button on it, it pops open and there's like a little packet of instant coffee inside for emergencies.
That's a little lower on the scale than what actually I was thinking would just sort of like, it would be like a caffeine drip, sort of on the lines of a morphine drip. You press that and you're only allowed to do it once every 10 minutes. So she's constantly badgering that thing to give her the next dose.
What if the Dominion, instead of creating the Jem'Hadar, they had created, kind of like in Star Wars when you have the clone army, they had used Catherine Janeway as the model. And they created just clones of Catherine Janeway. And the way they controlled them is that they had a little tube that, you know, went into their neck and it was coffee that was just flowing down all the time.
Yeah. Forget Ketracel White. This is the real addictive substance.
Yeah. This is a Valdez Brown.
Indeed.
All right.
I like
what
it.
Other buttons would you have on your captain's chair? Sure.
Okay. If I were in a bad mood, let's just say that things have not been going so well on the ship and I'm stressed out, I'm tired, and I may be a little cranky. Maybe I don't want to hear bad news. I would want a button so that if my first officer says, you know, Captain, you know, we need to airlock 4 other ensigns, they're screwing things up, I would just have this button that would instantly play really loud music so I couldn't hear the bad news. So something really loud and obnoxious, like maybe Klingon opera or something, you know, I would just hear the captain and then la 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 la, and then I would just nod and go about my business and pretend like nothing happened.
So you just you want to drown stuff out. You know, I could use one of those myself. You know, sometimes it's just too loud. You know, kids are bickering and stuff. That can work quite well.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to drown it all out. And sometimes if you plug in your ears and go, la, 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 it's not enough. So I figured that is the best solution I can think of to do that, aside from locking myself into my ready room. Now, the next thing that I thought about was every now and then as the captain, I'm going to want to mess with my officers because...
Of course.
Everybody needs to get their kicks and giggles somehow. And this is not that much of a stretch in my opinion. I mean, this is Star Trek and there are no seatbelts on the bridge, as we well know. I'm thinking about a button that just automatically, after I press it, jerks the ship like really hard to port. And so everybody falls out of their chair and everybody does a barrel roll right in front of me for my amusement.
Excellent. So a turbulence button.
Yes.
On the arm of your chair.
That's what we'll call it. Yes.
I like that idea.
Right.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I thought, you know, again, on those bad days, if I need a little pick-me-up, that might be something I do. Because.
It reminds me a little bit of a button I would want on my chair, which would be like the one that Mr. Burns has on his desk in The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. Especially, this would work really well on a bridge like the Enterprise D, where you've got a lot of empty space in front of the captain's chair. Mm-hmm. Have like a little trap door on the bridge. So, you know, if an ensign comes in and is giving you a report that you don't really like, you could just press the trap door button and he'll just fall right through.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's even better than my loud opera music. That would just take care of things like that. And that trap door sends him straight out the airlock. So it's done.
Excellent. That would be perfect.
Oh!
Also, a button that I would like to have if I were on the Enterprise D, I would like to have a button where when I press it, different women's voices would page Commander Riker over the PA system. That's like when I want to get Riker off the bridge, then I can just tap that
button. So, minuet to Commander Riker, could you come to Holodeck 2, please?
That's right.
Awesome.
That would be perfect.
I think that would be pretty good.
And then Troy's reactions would be fantastic, too.
They would. The rage of jealousy.
Every time it happened. Yeah.
Yeah, you would just cut to her and, you know, her mouth would be on the floor. What? What in the world? What now? Right. Yeah.
Of course, it would never work with Geordi, though, because Geordi would go, there must be some mistake. I know that no woman is paging me.
That's true. And then he would fix the darn problem. He would fix the console so it doesn't happen, and then the next time you're on the bridge for your duty shift and it doesn't work, it takes a little while to figure it out, and you're like, Geordi, damn it, you nerd. Seriously, get a life. Leave my shit alone. Yeah.
Then they would go into the observation lounge, and then Geordi would do a 5-step presentation to Picard of how he's going to fix the button.
Yeah. Now, I got to ask you, is that better or worse than a Tuvok PowerPoint?
I don't know. I kind of like Geordi's PowerPoints better than Tuvok's PowerPoints because Geordi gets excited about his plan, where Tuvok's just very dry about it. Yeah.
Yeah, at least Geordi's excited about his PowerPoint. You're right about that.
Yeah.
And I think, for my last button... I think, again, just for kind of kicks and giggles, because I'm the captain, darn it, there's two lowly ensigns I would have to page just because, and that would be Ensign Buffy Wilson and Ensign Harry Desmond.
Oh, that would be fantastic. And then they would run up to the bridge in their dresses.
In their stance. What's going on? Yes. Captain, can we help you? Oh, sure. Here's a pad. Could you take that to engineering? But it's a Harlequin Klingon romance paperback. Yeah, so take it, would you? B'Elanna needs that now. Aye, aye, Captain. And off they go.
And that would be perfect for the Next Generation because, even though these pads are electronic devices that can access documents from the computer, you still have to actually carry pads to other parts of the ship to deliver information to people.
Yes, so it seems. So we got to put these ensigns to use, and I think this is a very good job for them to have.
It sounds like it. All right, well, it sounds like you are going to have the best captain's chair in Starfleet. So let me know when it's ready, because I want to make sure that the Corps of Engineers duplicates that chair, replicates it for use on, at least on my ship at any rate, because I really want that chair.
All right.
All right, Char. Well, let's take a break from news and tell everyone about our sponsor, Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is the best platform for creating a personal website, a blog, portfolio if you're an artist. The new commerce feature lets you easily put together a store. And, you know, one thing I love about Squarespace is they are just constantly updating the platform with new features and new designs. They recently put out two new templates.
Yeah.
They recently added a new duplication feature to pages. And they're just always adding new functionality. And they have a great blog where they give you all the details of what's coming out. Now, Char, you've continued to use Squarespace for your website. And tell us again, what are some of the features that you are finding to be most useful to you?
Well, what I love the most is simply the drag and drop. That has made my life so easy when it comes to uploading images and making galleries, that whole bit. That has been one of the most amazing functional uses of Squarespace that I have enjoyed. Because at my workplace, I work on, you know, web pages all the time. I don't have this functionality. I'm working in Dreamweaver and I'm coding it all by hand. Or at the very bare minimum, I'm copying and pasting code. But really, same difference, because I've got to customize it to whatever the need is for, you know, whatever page it is I'm working on. With Squarespace, I can tell it to show, you know, two images per row, three, four, whatever I want. And it just does it. It uploads it for me. It's taken care of and it looks beautiful. So that's been a major time saver for me.
It does look beautiful, and it's very easy to rearrange the images once you get them in to the gallery. You know, if you want to put a gallery of, say, 12 images, you just drag all 12 images over at the same time and processes them. It creates, I believe, seven different sizes so that it can use them, you know, throughout the site if you need to use them in other places. Once they're there in the grid, you can just drag them to rearrange them. You can also work with the properties of each individual image. So if you want to create, like I've done this with Trek FM, covers of the different shows, but I want that to serve as a navigation element as well. I want you to be able to click each cover and jump through to the show page for that show. And, you know, if you did this in Dreamweaver, you would create a table, you would drop the covers into the grid of the table, and then attach links to them each way. And on here, you can just drop in, rearrange them, and add your click-through link to each cover art, and it will not only serve as a gallery and an easily manageable grid of artwork, but also it can serve as a navigation element too, and that's really fantastic.
Yeah, that kind of flexibility is not something you get with a lot of other platforms, unless you're doing it manually. And another thing that I really like about Squarespace is not only do you have that functionality and the flexibility to do what you want with a template, but then it's also very clean and professional looking. And that way, especially if you have like a portfolio where you have a lot of images or some kind of content that you really want to showcase, it's going to look really good.
Most definitely, yes. They have a wide assortment of templates that are designed by professional designers. And, you know, Squarespace really cares about designs. All their templates are extremely clean, and they allow you to really focus on the content of your website. And it's important, you know, to bring the reader in and focus on the content that you've spent so much time preparing. At the same time, Squarespace gives you amazing controls that allow you to modify this basic template and create a site that's uniquely your own, but still looks beautiful. And, you know, you don't have to be a designer. You don't have to be a programmer to do this stuff. very, very easy to do with Squarespace. And all the templates are what we call responsive design, meaning that they adapt themselves to mobile devices. So you can create a website that looks fantastic on the desktop. And then when you go over with a smartphone or a tablet and you view the site there, it will automatically reflow itself. Some of them make adjustments to how the header is displayed, the menu. Instead of trying to cram, you know, 8 menu items into a small space, it'll actually give you a menu link, which when you tap that on your smartphone, it will then bring a drop-down list of all those sections. So it's very, very clean, and you don't have to do anything on your own to make this work, which is what's so wonderful about it. It's you design the site once with Squarespace, and it's going to look fantastic across all devices and all display sizes.
Right. And if you've ever had to mess with that before, you know how much of a gift that really is, because that is not easy work.
No. You know, back in the day, you would actually have to create two separate sites, one for the desktop,
right,
one for mobile. So responsive design is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Another thing which we don't mention so often on here, but I really would like to point out, is Squarespace's 24/7 support. And if you've ever had to deal with a company where, you know, you need some help and you send them a message and takes them forever to get back to you, if they do get back to you at all. And even when they do, you kind of get put in a queue and it just takes a long time to get help. Squarespace is nothing like that. Squarespace, they are on top of their customers. And I've had this experience a number of times where, you know, I've had a question. I've had something that has come up because I have heavily modified Squarespace for my sites. And I'll tell you what, when I send Squarespace a message, it's like 2 minutes I have a response from them. And, you know, you can catch them on Twitter, you can do a support ticket through the website, but they respond so quickly and they're so dedicated to helping you solve the problem. You know, I had a problem that came up that had nothing at all to do with Squarespace. I wasn't sure at first what was going on. We quickly found that it had nothing to do with them. It was something else going on. They still exchanged like 7 or 8 messages with me to try to help me solve that problem. And you just don't get that kind of service from companies.
No, you really don't. And there is a reason why they are award-winning support, because not only do they hang in there with you, but they are incredibly, how should I say it? They're just incredibly good at what they do in terms of, okay, you put in your question, because I've asked them a couple of questions as well, and they make sure that you are heard, they make sure that they understand your problem or your question, and they make sure that you have answers so that you are satisfied by the end of it that what you wanted to have accomplished is done. And I'm sorry, most customer support is not like that. They don't really care that you have a problem. They just want your money and they want you to go away and not bother them. Squarespace is the absolute opposite of that.
Absolute opposite, most definitely. So we would like you to experience this for yourself. Squarespace has a special offer for Trek FM listeners. You can save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And the way you do it is you just go over to squarespace.com/trek and sign up for the free 14-day trial. There's no credit card required. You just enter your name and an email address, and they use that to create the trial site for you. You have complete use of Squarespace during those 14 days. All the features are available for you. You can import your existing site from WordPress or many other blogging platforms if you'd like to see what it looks like there. Use the features, tweak it, find out how easy it is to use Squarespace. And then when you sign up, the pricing is fantastic. It's just $8 a month for the standard package. It's $16 per month for the unlimited package, which is the most popular one, and it gives you unlimited pages, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited contributors, everything that you need. And then if you'd like to step up to the business package for $24 per month, you can also get the amazing new commerce features, which can help you set up an online store in just a matter of minutes. And when you choose the annual or biannual plan, you can get a free domain registered as well as part of your Squarespace package. So if you want to set up your own domain, they'll help you do that as well. So just go to squarespace.com/trek and enter the offer code TREK5, and that will get you 10% off with Squarespace. And you'll be supporting our sponsor and helping us bring this programming to you every week. All right, Char, well, as we move into movie news and rumors, which is really just movie news these days, because, I don't know, there aren't that many rumors left. We've only got a few weeks to go, and the film has already premiered in various places as part of the World Premiere Roadshow. And I believe the first of those was the one in Sydney on April 23rd, which TrekZone.org covered. And if you'd like to see photos of the event and get a spoiler-free write-up of that one, you can go over to TrekZone.org, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And then after that, they headed over to Russia, to Moscow, for a big event.
Right. And then to Paris. And then, most recently for us, they'll be in Berlin. We're recording
That's
this right. the 28th. They'll be premiering the 29th, so tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So by the time you hear this show, they will have already completed their road movie to Berlin. But it's interesting how they're premiering this in these red carpet events in many different cities. And they're going to be in London coming up at the beginning of May as well. Mm-hmm. And for all the secrecy surrounding the movie, to keep rolling it out in different places all over the world, bit by bit by bit, by the time it premieres for the general audience, if you want to know what happens in this movie, I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to find a word-by-word transcript of it somewhere online.
Yeah, that was my thought as well, was, JJ, you were so secretive about this thing, and now, yeah, right now, you could probably see some kind of a bootleg of somebody recording this, say, in Russia, and watch the movie. So I'm a little bit baffled by that, but at the same time, it is kind of cool for those audiences around the world to have their own premiere, because they don't usually get that. Do they?
I don't know. I mean, we do in Tokyo. We get these kind of things in Tokyo, but there's just so many of them, and it's such an organized campaign of like hopping from city to city to city to city for Into Darkness. And I'm not really surprised that Bad Robot would be doing this, because they really have very elaborate marketing frameworks around the shows and the movies they produce. But it's just kind of funny, after all the secrecy that surrounded it, to have this coming up. But anyway, but it's great, you know, that it's out there, and in just a couple of weeks, everyone will be able to see this for themselves. And
yes,
another thing as part of getting this rolling are new TV spots. They've been flooding us with posters, as we, I think, mentioned earlier in news, and they're releasing a lot of different TV spots as well.
Yeah, indeed. I've seen a few different things on TV here in the States. And then there's even more stuff being released by Paramount that you can watch on YouTube or Apple TV or Apple Trailers. So we've got all sorts of stuff to psych us up as we wait, the rest of us wait, for the premiere in our local theaters.
And I'll be waiting for a long time, as you know.
Right. Yeah, you've got a long way to go. I don't know how you're going to get through that many months spoiler-free. In fact, it's probably not going to happen. Am I right?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm going to have to find a way to see it on a base. Because if I wait for Japanese theaters, as I've mentioned many times here, it's going to be August 23rd. So,
yeah, but that's unacceptable.
But Char, this first trailer that we're going to talk about, where it's kind of like a biography of Spock, and I believe there's a new one I saw coming out for Kirk as well, but this one of Spock, it's narrated by Cumberbatch, and as I got to the end of it, my thought was, it's Cybok, because a long time on the Ready Room, we were speculating, like, who's the villain going to be in the movie, and we had this big joke about Cybok being in the movie, and I kind of got the feeling that this might be Cybok.
I really hope it's not, just because...
it's not Cybok.
Yeah, no, I don't want them to go there. But who knows, right? We will see. This is a very intense trailer.
Yeah, it's about the internal struggle for Spock, and, you know, they say he's torn between two worlds, and then at the end, Harrison says, you know, which will he choose? I will help him decide. And
right.
I thought it's like Cybok taking away your pain and helping you to. That was my thought.
I hope you're wrong, Chris. I hope you're wrong.
They're really playing up the destruction of Vulcan has allowed them to play this emotional angle of Spock a lot more than they did in the Prime universe, which
yes.
most of us call Star Trek. And then there's the Abrams verse here. I mean, you could always say that Spock was torn between two worlds, but it wasn't like this. It wasn't this overly dramatic situation that Zachary Quinto Spock finds himself in.
Right. Like in this trailer, there is a scene where it looks like Spock is screaming, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And Prime Universe Spock just didn't do that very often.
No, this is where Spock is screaming, Khan! That's what's going on.
Oh, is that what he's doing? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes some sense.
They just cut it to make it look like, you know, he's in pain or something, but he's just screaming Khan.
Maybe he is in pain, though. Maybe Khan, like, we only see his face, really. Maybe he's physically torturing Spock.
Could
be. Causing real pain.
I did notice that this trailer is 43 seconds long, and I think the fact that it's not 47 seconds long tells you everything that you need to know about this
Good
being
call.
What do they call it? New Trek now.
Right. That's the difference right there.
Now, the other clip is a scene where Kirk and the crew, they all run in on the bridge in their scuba suits, so I assume this is taking place during that part where we know at some point the Enterprise is completely underwater in this in this episode. They're in the ocean of this planet. Spock's in the volcano, and they all run in, and pretty much everybody gets to have a speaking line in this scene. Now, what did you think about this scene, Char?
Well, you know, the first thing that I noticed, of course, were these scuba suits, and they... for a very particular reason, remind me of the jumpsuits in the motion picture because they're very tight and you can see a lot of junk.
These are the
That's
too
all.
Much junk scuba suits. At least they're not pastel colors.
Thank goodness for that. And there's no weird thing like pseudo control panel on your belly button.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, that aside, it is a nice action-packed scene. Kirk and company are on the bridge, but Spock is still like in a volcano, as we've seen little clips of before. And it's very intense because the heat is disrupting the communication with Spock. And Kirk asks, what would Spock do if our roles were reversed? And Bones says he'd let you die.
Yeah.
So, very intense. And anytime someone says, what would Spock do? I think of those bracelets, you know, that people had. What would Jesus do? WWJD.
Oh,
WWSD. What would Spock do?
So it has like a little Vulcan fish on it?
I think it would be like WW, and then it would be like the IDIC symbol,
yeah,
and then D, yeah, with a question mark at the end in beads. I'd buy one.
WW Idic, huh? That's how you would read
or
that.
Or
right?
It would be the Vulcan salute. One of those two.
Maybe so.
Something that reminds you of Vulcans.
Well, I found this clip to be very frantic, and I think that it will make a little more sense, or it will feel a little more natural within the context of the movie.
I agree.
I feel that as a 2-minute clip, it just feels there's so much going on. Everyone has to get their line in. I don't know, the acting from a lot of the actors doesn't come across very well in this clip. I think Chris Pine is excellent. But I don't know. I don't know what I think about this clip.
You didn't get a lot out of it, it sounds like?
I don't know. It made me nervous. It made me feel like not exactly what I wanted to see. But, well, okay. Zoe was there in her scuba suit. I did want to see that, so I was happy about that.
And she looked very good in her scuba suit.
She certainly did.
Of course, we know that Matt is waiting to see Alice Eve in her scuba suit.
Right. Well,
which we don't get to see in this clip, unfortunately.
She's just going to go into the water in her skivvies, right? She's not actually going to put on
the is that what she's going to do?
That's what she's
I thought she would at least have a scuba suit. And then, like, she would strip down into her skivvies, change out of her uniform into the scuba suit. That's what I think that scene could be.
Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe that's what it is.
Maybe. We'll see.
I also, now tell me, maybe I'm just being the jaded old Star Trek fan and being kind of cynical about the Abrams verse. I don't know. Tell me what you think. I didn't like the fact that Spock says the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few in the scene when he's in the volcano, because it felt like that. It's like, it's a Star Trek film. We have to have Spock say this. Let's have him say it right here. I don't know. It felt like cliche to me. Is that just me being like an old geezer?
I'm not going to call you an old geezer. I see where you're coming from. But I think you were right when you said earlier that when we see how this clip fits into the context of the film as a whole, I think maybe that line might fit a little more, because I thought it stood out a little bit too. And they were, yeah, maybe saying it because, well, that's just something Spock would say. And, hey, we're going to prove to you this is a Trek film and we're going to make Spock say this.
Right.
Maybe it's got a little more meaning than that. And I guess we'll see.
Yeah, probably so within the context of the film. I think it's tough when you pull 2 minutes out of a film like this, and just especially when it's such a frantic scene.
Right. And, yeah, so much is going on.
We'll
They're
see.
Trying to show like how intense this film is, and I'm sure it is, but yeah. 2 minutes out
I do
of
love
feature.
The redesign of the bridge, I will say.
The redesign of the bridge it does look good.
Looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The video game has that new bridge redesign in it as well.
Oh, good.
And it's very nice, all of the different color textures that are now on the bridge. It's not quite as antiseptic, you know, hospital feeling like it was in the first movie where everything is so white that you're blinded.
Not even Apple Store.
Before the lens flares start. it's not an Apple Store anymore. So it looks
quite
nice.
Well, that's good to hear. I have not picked up the Star Trek video game yet. I'm not a whole much of a gamer. I just don't have a whole lot of time for it anymore. And frankly, unless it's on the Wii, I don't have the console for it. That's how out of touch I am from gaming these days.
All right. Yeah. Well, when they release the Legend of Zelda Star Trek crossover game, you'll be set.
There you go.
Which would actually be really awesome. I'd like to have that.
Actually, yeah, I'd play that.
All right, last item that we're going to talk about in news before we jump to the feature. This is a UK Where's Waldo? It's Where Scotty promotion that Paramount UK is running. We've talked about all the posters that were being flooded with. You know, every character is getting their own poster, a still from the film, made kind of blurry. Paramount was very remiss in leaving out a very important character, but thankfully our own Tristan Riddell took care of that, and he released his own Kienzer poster. I don't know if you saw that on Twitter, but Tristan very quickly filled that gap that was left there by Paramount.
Yeah, and good job, Tristan. You were fulfilling a very important need there.
And Kienzer looked really badass on Tristan's poster, I have to say.
He really did. Yeah, Tristan did a bang-up job on that poster.
But this promotion, people have noticed that while they're seeing posters of many of the other characters, they haven't been seeing very many Scotty posters. And there's a reason for that. 10 different Scotty posters have been placed in key locations around the United Kingdom. And the contest is that you have to spot these Scotty posters, and then you have to report back that you have found them. And if you do this, you have a chance of winning 2 tickets to the May 2nd London premiere of Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah, that seems like a fun, interactive fan experience. If I were in London, I would probably be going all around town trying to find Scotty. And it kind of makes me think of Star Trek 3, you know, search for Scotty, search for Spock. Is Scotty dead in this film? Is he going to die?
Oh,
Scotty.
That's a good question.
I'm really sad now. I don't want Scotty to die. But I realize it's just a hashtag campaign.
it's just a hashtag campaign. That's right.
I think
they should do it like George and Gracie in Star Trek 4. They should put it on the side of buses and you have to spot the bus driving by.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. You know, the one thing I was really wanting to see when the Enterprise was underwater in that trailer that we were talking about, I really wanted to see a couple of whales.
Well, you do get that other creature, so it does look like Scotty might be at the Cetacean Institute. I was just waiting for Zachary Quinto to swim by in his underwear, try to mind meld with that giant fish.
Right. I hope that happens in the film. Yes.
When Voyager was lost in the Delta Quadrant, the entire crew left someone behind at home. Everyone lost a member of their family, in a sense, except for the Doctor. And, you know, he wanted to have that experience himself, so he created a family on the holodeck. And it was a little bit like Leave It to Beaver, until B'Elanna went and all Klingoned it up. And today we're going to talk about that episode, Real Life. And to help us do that, we have with us from jolly old England, host of Trek News and Views and Tech 8, it's Colin Higgins. Colin, thanks for staying up for us.
It's not a problem. It's always a pleasure to do the Red Room. So thanks for having me back.
Yeah, great to have you. And then we have also joining Char from To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Journey! Oh, slow.
So you guys are a lot better on your own show. What's going on here? It's Lori Sears. Lori, thanks for joining us this week.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
Great. So, Char, you are, besides being our managing editor and apparently a mistress,
which is a full-time job in and of itself, yes.
You're also our Voyager editor, so why don't you kick us off with real life?
All right. Well, as you mentioned, this is the episode where the Doctor has a family. And it starts off just a little too squeaky clean. B'Elanna almost pukes from the sugar overload and says, "This is not a real family, Doctor. Why don't I show you what it's really like?" And she goes in, monitors or modifies some subroutines and basically screws it all up. And suddenly, it's a lot more like what I think we understand as a family situation.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
But so, B'Elanna's reaction as she's sitting at that dinner table is priceless, though.
Yeah.
Best part of the scene.
That's basically my reaction when I'm watching this part of the episode. It happened the first time. It happened this time, watching the episode in preparation for the podcast. Just, oh, the overload of saccharin. I'm going to be sick. No family is like that. I'm sorry.
No, no. Nobody I know is like that. That's not even human.
Yeah,
it reminds Gilligan's Island?
It reminded me of Donna Reed, like a 1950s sitcom. So incredibly perfect. The house is absolutely in pristine condition. The children are polite and clean and happy, and all they have is praise for their daddy. And, you know, little wifey, of course, she learns to, what does she do? She takes a class on replicating recipes.
Yes, she does.
That's like getting recipes for microwave stuff.
So is it continental cuisine or something like that?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So
okay,
I can replicate all the best dishes.
You have a rough life, sweetheart.
I just picture that class where they teach you how to ask the computer for certain dishes. Is that how that works?
I guess.
Yeah.
I suppose when you're ordering French food, if you're ordering French food, you probably have to do it in a French accent. That's probably what they teach you.
It's how you hold your mouth when you ask the computer. That's what it is.
I'm actually quite shocked, Char, that you don't stand at the doorway with a cup of coffee for your husband and kiss him goodbye.
He doesn't drink coffee.
Ah, details.
And I sleep in later than he does. This is real life.
That's real life. Definitely.
Oh, really? I always pictured it, Char, that you and your cat, Teddy, are both standing at the door and Teddy's looking up at you and you're looking down at Teddy and you say, "But Teddy, I want to be the first one to wish him a great day at work."
Now, let's and not Teddy's, fight. Yeah. You went first yesterday. Now get out of my way! He has to go.
Yeah, little birds. Little birds in a nest get along.
Yeah.
Come on.
Teddy would hunt those little birds and eat them. No, I'm afraid our house is not quite like that. In fact, not at all. No.
I don't think anyone's house is like that.
No. Husband wakes up, he eats his waffles, checks his email, gets dressed, leaves work, kisses me goodbye while I'm halfway asleep, and then I wake up about an hour later. The cat's usually in the bed. We wake up together. I hold him because we have a morning routine where I have to hold him. I eat my breakfast, shower, scarf it all down, and get out of the house because I'm always 15 minutes late. Somehow manage to get to work on time because I drive too fast, and that's my day. How about you?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question. If you come home, like if the morning's very hectic and you don't have time to hold the cat long enough in the morning, has he like wrecked the entire house? What's going on?
Yeah, he usually, I walk in and there is just Klingon music blaring through the whole house.
Oh,
I mean, the cops have been called because the neighbors are sick to death of hearing about it.
Oh, so he has his two little Targ friends are over trying to get him to attack a dog.
I have to kick them out of the house because they're not welcome here. And they leave like this massive, huge litter mess. And then water is spilled everywhere. They've eaten all of the freaking food. It's ridiculous.
All the canned
pumpkins. Every single freaking day, too.
I like the way you can stay in bed for an hour and still be late.
Well, that's how that works. I hate getting out of bed. I'm a very slow mover in the morning. And that's why I have to really just, it's like a massive hurry up and wait kind of a thing for me in the morning. After one.
How do you know when you've had enough Teddy holding time?
He decides it's time to birdwatch.
Oh, so he just
he kind of gives you the claw.
Yeah,
he pushes away from me and then says, "Okay, Mom, that was really cute, but we're done now and you're free to go."
Okay, all right.
But do you have coffee from Pascal Free?
I don't. I've got Jamaican blend, double strong, double sweet, though.
Oh, well, why also be proud then?
Yeah. I mix it up a little. Sometimes with some Irish cream, no less. Okay, but why are we talking...
Irish cream. Sorry.
We're just all really fascinated with your cat routine, Char.
I know.
Yeah, how did this become an interview? What the hell?
All right.
Well, you
You're the one with kids, Chris. We should be asking
your morning routine.
So I think it leads us back to the doctor's family and the big question of why there's no cat in the family. But anyway, so the beginning of the episode is really funny. And then, as we mentioned, B'Elanna and Cass come over for dinner and they see how ridiculous this family is. Although Cass does a really good job of kind of playing along and trying to support the doctor. And,
yes.
I mean, I guess maybe she doesn't know how, maybe Ocampan families are like this. I don't know. She didn't seem like it was very unusual. So, or I think she's just being nice. And, but then B'Elanna, of course, is like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well,
to an Ocampan, the teenage bit would last about like a day.
Wouldn't that be nice?
You know, because of how quick they grow. I mean, they probably wake up in the morning and a teenager, by the time they go to bed, they're 20.
That would be okay.
Oh, that's
that
a good
would
point.
Save a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
So you've only got,
puberty
you've
for
got
everyone,
a very you've got a very short amount of time to get your Klingon opera music in.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
as a parent, you know, you've only got, like you say, a couple of weeks of really struggling with that teenage attitude,
right.
And then
you've got like what, 2 weeks of acne fights and loud music. How else would the Ocampans rebel?
They go to the surface.
I will not eat my food ration for the day.
Yeah,
I'm going to the surface.
Yeah, that's true.
I will hold my breath until you tell me what to do and turn blue. And then get a job on TNG as a hairdresser.
So B'Elanna changes the program. Now, do you feel that B'Elanna went overboard in any way? Or did she give the doctor a true representation of family life?
I think it was kind of a true representation. Obviously, the Klingon. The guy going into the Klingon bit was definitely B'Elanna.
Yeah.
This just took a Klingon attitude in there just for good measure. But I think she did a fair representation of teenage angst and attitude and all that type of stuff. And the career wife.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that was good, the career wife. The bit that got me was at the dinner table when B'Elanna stood up and offered to alter the program for him, bearing in mind this is B'Elanna, and the doctor went yes.
It was kind of naive.
While Cass is standing smugly behind B'Elanna with an inane smile on her face.
Yes, as if she knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
She's very encouraging this whole time.
Yeah, I've read the script. I know what's coming. You don't.
It's too bad it wasn't Tom Paris who offered to alter the program, and then, you know, he'd have an Irish wife, and they would drive around in old automobiles.
Camera.
And
who knows? I need to have a killer robot.
As the housekeeper, maybe?
As a housekeeper, yeah. Would never vacuum.
Killer robot. As the housekeeper, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. A futuristic Brady Bunch.
When the son come out with his teenage angst, he could have just opened the cupboard door and let the robot out.
I like this. And the son, Jeffrey, would be modeled after Harry Kim, and he would be desperately trying to get a date, but he never would.
Poor loser. Yeah, he's having no luck with the ladies. He's asking Dad for advice, which is just a little bit awkward. But frankly, the poor guy has nowhere else to turn to.
Well, in defense of the doctor, unlike Harry, the doctor does actually get a woman.
Well, that's just it. I mean, for as limited experience as the doctor has, he's actually got some.
Yeah, whereas he does. Harry hasn't got anything apart from calluses.
I think B'Elanna did Jeffrey a favor, to be honest, when she changed him, because he probably was getting the crap beat out of himself at school, and that little girl, somebody could take her down too, seriously. They both needed some spines for sure. So
they did.
That was helpful.
Yeah.
B'Elanna, I don't know.
Gave them much more personality, shall we say.
Yeah.
Realistic personality.
Realistic personality.
Yeah. And his wife went from being someone at the Stepford Wives to someone out of, like, you know, Black Wednesday or something, I don't know.
Yeah, I felt like it was realistic. I didn't feel like it was over the top.
No, I think his wife turned out to be an actual normal mother and wife in the situation.
Yes.
I mean, you know, this family quite parallels mine in the sense that, you know, I have a son and a daughter. They're about the same age as Jeffrey and Belle in this episode. And the chaotic nature, like when the doctor walks back in after the program has been modified the first time, you know, and his wife is in a hurry to get out the door because she has to get to work. And his daughter is trying to find some item that she needs for school that she can't remember where she put it because she didn't put it where you told her to keep it. This is all completely real life. This is what things are like every day. So,
so does your son have Klingon opera music on his iPod, Chris?
He does not have that. No, unfortunately. And he doesn't have any Klingon friends, but... No, I did find that the Belle storyline was a lot more realistic. I mean, it's something that you as the viewer could identify with, that, you know, you have a child who is involved in all these activities and it's always a rush and you can't find anything. And then the Jeffrey storyline was realistic in the sense of the angst and the rebellion of wanting to go his own way. But of course, you have the Star Trek element here of having the Klingons thrown into it, which you wouldn't normally have. And normally you would not have your son preparing to attack someone with a dagger in order to prove himself a warrior. I hope you don't have that.
It's a rite of passage.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's just another
I can think
culture.
Of some other rites of passage that are a lot more fun than attacking people with a Klingon dagger.
Yeah. A little, maybe a little.
While we're talking about Jeffrey and the Klingons, Shar, you mentioned in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
The performance of the guest actors, and at least the two playing Larg and Kakoth. I don't know what I thought about those. I suppose channeling teenage angst through a Klingon personality was okay, but the thing that I noticed most about that was that on Voyager, even the real Klingons are Kazon, because they came across a lot more like Kazon to me than any Klingons that I've known from any of the other series.
Yeah, well, if nothing else, they look almost like a Kazon Klingon half-breed. If you could bring over some Kazon to the Delta Quadrant and have them mate with Klingons, that's what these guys would be. They've got the Kazon hair, a little bit of the Klingon forehead, and yet they're also in the awkward teenage phase, so we're really not sure what's going on here.
That's quite an unsettling thought. Klingons mating with Kazon.
I'm pretty sure that's illegal. That's going to get you into some trouble, Shar. That's going to get you into some trouble, this kind of smuggling Klingons to the Delta Quadrant and mating them with Kazon?
Yeah, that is a recipe some kind for of trouble. It, very much. Yes.
Federation trafficking laws involved there, I'm pretty sure.
Yes. is there enough hair lacquer in the Alpha Quadrant to keep that hairstyle going for the Kazon?
No.
No.
That's super hold they're using.
Maybe the Delta Quadrant has Aquanet factories or something.
No, they just have a surplus of plastic, so they put it on their head.
I get it now.
Well, they probably don't shower because they haven't got any water.
That's right. See? The solution.
Sand bath. Mm-hmm.
That and the Aquanet, that's how that happens. You've got dreads from hell.
I get it now in this episode, though. These eddies and their shooting stuff, that's Aquanet that they're shooting out of.
So that was the big Aquanet factory we were seeing?
That's the source. Okay. They want to collect the Aquanet. The Kazon are going to come and collect the Aquanet from those eddies so that they can maintain their hairstyles.
That makes this B-plot make so much more sense. Because otherwise, I honestly was quite bored by the whole thing. Like, it's just the space adventure of the week. We have to fill the space up with something. And as we mentioned on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
You know, we're kind of split halfway on this panel. Two of us didn't like this. Two of us did. Chris, make your case, buddy. Convince me.
Okay. I didn't say that I liked it. I said that I understood what they were doing.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't understand, so we're still split.
Okay. Well, what they were doing was that... So the doctor keeps... With the family, B'Elanna changes the program, and the doctor keeps hitting these bumps in the road with his family and with his children. And so he keeps having to deal with these difficult situations that keep popping up in as they do in real life, in family life. And then, of course, at the end, he gets stuck when he can't help Bill, and he feels trapped. And so his solution is, of course, to end the program. And these space eddies keep popping up, and there can be some kind of reward there for Voyager if they can collect this energy, just like there can be some reward for the Doctor, you know, if he can make his family life work. And so they send Tom in, but the eddies keep coming up and they keep dissipating. And then Tom goes in and he gets trapped inside that like a spatial rift. So that's a lot like the Doctor being trapped at the end with Bill, where he can't help her.
But the difference with the spatial rift is Janeway wanted to shoot it.
Yes, right.
Right.
She didn't want to shoot the Doctor's family.
But so Tom gets out, and then the Doctor ultimately goes back in, and he has to tell Bill that she's going to die. So they both have a very rough way out of these situations. I think that's what they were doing here. They were paralleling these two situations between the Voyager crew and Tom, and then what the Doctor was going through. And I kind of liked it because it was one of the rare cases on Voyager where this whole space adventure B-plot actually had something to do with the story. The problem is that the way it was cut and the way that it unfolded left you wondering what was going on for most of the episode. And it really isn't until you get to the end, and after you've watched the episode quite a few times, that you kind of make the connection of what they're actually trying to do with the B-plot. So I kind of liked that they did something that was related to the story, because usually they'll have some good story going on, and they'll keep taking you back to the ship for 20 minutes so that Tuvok can spout technobabble and do a PowerPoint presentation. And yes. As you said, Colin... tell Harry to do his damn job.
Yes. And,
yeah. For no reason, because they never mentioned why he told Harry off or anything like that. It's just like, instant, when you finish playing Pac-Man, can you like do your job?
So in this case, it was there. But the thing is that, as always is the case with these problems in space that Voyager encounters, is that Janeway is like, I got to get my crew home. We've got a long journey home. It's my job as the captain to see that I get my crew safely home. And then it's like someone yells, squirrel! And the squirrel is like some kind of really, really dangerous thing happening in space. And Janeway's head turns and she's like, Tom, set a course for that really dangerous area of space over there. And make sure that you come to a full stop when you're right in the middle of it.
Yeah, Jen. Let's risk our lives in the name of scientific exploration this week. Because I was a scientist.
Right, that's right. They were scientists. We have to avenge their death.
That's right. Those people on that station. We've got to get to the bottom of this.
But this is the other problem is this space tornado, for want of a better word, destroys a space station. So we'll send in a little tiny, teeny, tiny shuttle.
Right.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Come on.
Get with it.
This is the Janeway solution to wind problems. Shoot at the wind. And if that doesn't work, send in a tiny ship.
Wow. Mommy said we'd be around Janeway on Cody night.
Part of the reason why I don't like this B plot is that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And ultimately, in the end, there is no major end to it. I mean, I suppose the end is that Tom is safe and gets out of it, and he's alive.
Exactly.
But that's it?
Yeah. That's the point.
No. What the real B plot was, Tom actually gets out alive and writes a romantic novel. and hands it to Balada and says, that's how you write a story.
Oh, see, that must have been in the deleted scenes.
It's in the extras. It's in the extras.
You got those extras, man.
Yeah, wait till the Blu-ray comes out. They'll be on there.
Yeah.
It will be on there.
Gotcha.
It's interesting that you bring this up, Char, because last week on Literary Treks, we did Voyager Comics.
Yeah.
And we had Tristan on. And you get to the end of this comic called False Colors, and it's kind of an interesting story. There are these aliens who have gotten a hold of a Borg cube. Don't ask how that happens, but they did.
I heard your episode.
And these aliens are doing Borg cosplay to scare other aliens that they encounter so they can steal their technology and such. And
that's awesome.
And so the concept's kind of interesting, but you get to the end of the comic and you're like in what would be the second act in an episode on television, and it just ends. And we're like, what's going on? And we said, well, no, basically what happened was Voyager escaped and everyone was okay. And that was the end. And that's like you're saying, it's like kind of here too.
It just...
The whole Space Eddie thing, the only payoff at the end for the Voyager crew is that they didn't die.
Right.
And they got away.
That's always a plus.
It is, but that happens every week. And the only difference with this episode and every other episode where this happened is, of course, we have the contrast of Belle dying. So one side of life, one side of death. Okay, I get it. But the B plot just didn't do it really good,
but it was all on B'Elanna's pad.
Well, and it was also Janeway in her ready room trying to get the heck out of the situation she dug herself into. What the bleep am I going to do now? Chakotay, bring me some coffee. Right? Bleep, 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 bleep.
I think what happened here is that the writer, Harry Duck Clore, as we were talking about.
And what a name.
He was looking for what is a space situation. Now, of course, I don't know if this is what he was really thinking. It's just my perception as a viewer. Looking for what is some sort of situation that a spaceship might encounter in space that I can use to parallel what's going to go on with my human story with the Doctor and his family. Oh, here's an idea. There's this space energy eddy tornado cyclone thing. And they get caught in it, and it'll be kind of cool because we can have lots of, you know, it reminded me of like a tornado hitting a trailer park and all the debris is flying around everywhere. Visually, that's what it was like these chunks of things flying everywhere. And like, okay, well, this will work. This will parallel. And then at the end, you kind of forget that that situation actually needs to have some meaning, some... Mm-hmm. purpose for the crew to be involved in it as well, and that's what we didn't get. So
I felt that's what was lacking, and had there been a tie-in like that, everything would have turned out beautifully. Okay, that's what
if they had just collected some energy and they could boost the engines and they could get, you know, 5 light years closer to home, at least you could walk away and say, okay, well, there was some purpose to it.
One of those things would have been enough of a payoff to justify the whole freaking thing. But we didn't get it.
The only parallel I saw was the fact, that's why I said, I said it before, but the payoff to me was the fact that the Doctor got to yell at Tom for being a risk taker. When he really wasn't yelling at Tom, he was thinking about Belle.
That's true.
In the program. So he was very frustrated in that situation. So I thought, well, okay, they kind of go together in that way. Tom is a risk taker. He's going to go out and just jump in that shuttle and fly around in a tornado. And Belle's going to do something stupid with Parisi Squares. But
at that moment, you feel that way. But it took the whole episode to get to that scene.
Which also brings up the question, though, because this is a photonic family. Why didn't the Doctor just change the program to save his daughter?
Well, I guess B'Elanna, we're supposed to believe that B'Elanna did something so that, you know.
She locked him out.
Yeah.
I think the safety protocols malfunctioned. That's probably what happened.
Is that what happened? Maybe she took the safeties offline.
I mean, you see Parisi Squares pop up in Star Trek a lot, and no one ever dies from it.
Belle did.
Early in the episode, didn't you think that the purpose of the space eddies was to cause a holodeck malfunction.
When I first watched this episode, that is what occurred to me. And I thought, this is going to be a horrible episode. Because we've seen it and we're going to see it again.
I'll definitely give Voyager credit here for not causing a holodeck malfunction.
Yes, amen to that. Thank goodness they did not go there.
It's such a scene.
And that's not just a Voyager thing. That's like throughout all of Star Trek, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, even with things like Our Man Bashir, there's always some kind of malfunction.
Yes.
I mean, the holodeck's like the most dangerous piece of equipment ever invented.
They never learn.
It's more dangerous than a transporter.
It is.
Yeah, I think.
Unless, sure.
Yeah, the holodeck has killed more people than the transporter, hasn't it?
You know, if the Federation ever had holodecks in the Romulan War, they wouldn't have had to do anything else. Just put the Romulans in the holodecks. You would have killed them for them.
Hey, guys, don't worry. Yeah, we captured you. Don't worry. We're not gonna execute you. We're not going to throw you in the brig or anything. We've got this really cool program. It's have you ever heard of Sherlock Holmes? come on, let's you just lock them in there.
Right, the real program would have been Andorian fight scenes.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
Oh, yes.
This is true. Mm. This is true.
How about Fairhaven?
And then after that, they would lock them in some of Riker's historical research holodeck programs. These are the voyages. Just have them watch that as if it were an episode.
Check in on them. They're fast asleep.
Riker does MasterChef.
Well, another show they would want to watch, of course, would be Super Nanny, because we get Super Nanny in this episode when the Doctor goes back after B'Elanna has modified the program, and when he walks in and he lays down the schedule of what everyone's going to do, it was just so much like Super Nanny. I thought he was going to roll out a big piece of paper where he's got the schedule
written out
for everyone. He was going to like tack it up on the side of the refrigerator. Well, he's the father in this case, so it wouldn't work. So normally the father would get really pissed and say, we're not going to do any of that. And I can't believe you come into my house and try to tell me how to run my family. I know we're being paid to be on your TV show and everything, but still.
Yeah, how ridiculous.
He did sit down and give him a pad each with how we're going to be a good family.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He did.
Well, so maybe that was his list. He's just missing the naughty step.
Yeah.
Send Jeffrey to kick the Klingon Kazon guys out. Put Jeffrey on the naughty step. Jeffrey gets up and he picks him up and he carries him back over there. And he's like, Dad, but I'm like 14 years old.
I like it. What I liked about this scene was that the wife, Charlene, stands up for herself. She has a spine now, and she does not put up with this crap.
No, she didn't take it.
You
can't.
Because she is right. They should have presented this as a united front. They should have talked about it amongst each other first. And he should not have sat her down like one of the children and said, oh, we're going to do this. Oh, that's not how that works, Doc. No, it says a lot about, I guess, his idea of what he thinks a family is, which...
Everybody had to make changes but him.
And it's kind of sexist. I mean, he's definitely the patriarch here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's also missing the quintessential parent tool, which is vodka.
Vodka is the cure-all for parenting problems.
You know, with a family like that, he wouldn't be drinking coffee. He'd be drinking something a lot stronger.
Absolutely.
Well, it makes you wonder where the Doctor gets his idea of what a family unit is like and what the father's role is like, because again, he is the ship's computer. So
he should have
access to every piece of fiction ever written. As well, of course, as a doctor who's been programmed with the knowledge of all the greatest doctors in Federation history, there would have to be, you know, child psychologists and marriage counselors and people like that who have contributed to his knowledge as well.
Yeah, and beyond the 1950s.
Maybe he sat down and watched every solitary episode of The Waltons.
Oh. Could be. Or Andy Griffith or Little House on the Prairie. Yeah.
Little House on the Prairie.
Donna Reed.
There should have been a scene where they all say goodnight and all the lights go out individually in each room.
Good night, John boy.
Yeah. That's how the episode should have ended.
Yeah.
Had Belle not died. That should have been it.
Good night.
Good night, Belle.
And what was with his... Why did he choose that name?
That's Kenneth? Belle?
Yeah.
Kenneth, that was funny.
Yeah, where did that come from? There's no explanation at all.
Yeah, I mean, we had the episode where he was trying to think of a name. And he went through the whole episode thinking what to call himself. And then as soon as he writes a holo program, I'll be called Kenneth. Why?
makes you wonder how he decided that, when, and why.
Yeah.
And then he never uses it again, of course. So it obviously was brilliant.
So this is in the third season. If they had continued for the rest of the series where every time the Doctor met someone new, if he said, call me Kenneth, wouldn't that have been a great way to,
that would have been a great
tie it in.
Yes. Yeah. Because one thing that really annoys me about this episode is how he creates his family, goes through this little adventure, and then we never see or hear about this family ever again. They're gone. Well, poof. Let
me ask you guys this. Do you feel, of course we never see the family again, and I don't really mind that we don't see the family again because it was all just a holodeck program, but do you detect any effect on the way the Doctor thinks, the way he reacts in situations after this that was influenced by this experience?
No, there's no throwback to this at all.
No, I don't think so either. Really.
No, yeah. It's a bottle episode for all intents and purposes. They do the episode, they put it in the bottle, and they throw the bottle at the back.
Right, and this is
It's like he took a Sims program and just threw himself into it.
Yeah,
exactly.
It was all set up.
If you're going to do it properly, the effect for a parent of losing a child will have a profound effect on.
Oh my god!
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's none of this rubbish about character building, because losing a child is not character building. Losing the child will devastate you, and the fact that they casually brush it under the carpet and move on. You know, if you take TNG, Data references Lal in TNG, even after she's gone.
Yes, and we should have had something like that from the Doctor, because this is a traumatic event, and he shouldn't have just been able to have gone on cheerfully, happily. I mean, by the next episode, it's as if it never happened.
Right,
I kind of understand why they didn't revisit this full force, because if he goes back and is with a grieving family and they're dealing with the loss of a child, that doesn't necessarily make for good TV. I understand that.
Right.
But there should have been something, some kind of a reference, some kind of a line.
Right. Well, they don't have to revisit it by having him go back to the same family on the holodeck and, you know, see how Charlene and Jeffrey are doing later. But the thing is that they created an episode for the Doctor to explore part of what it would be like to be a real person and not just a hologram. Mm-hmm. Now, if the Doctor wants to expand his horizons, still, I think the Doctor probably has the most character development on the show from start to finish. The Doctor, maybe Tom Paris, probably the two best characters on Voyager from where they start and where they end up. So they do get growth over the course of the series, but in this case, the Doctor has decided to do this experiment for himself. So you would really, really expect that it would somehow influence how he reacts to the crew and other situations in every episode after this, because he's taken it upon himself to expand his understanding of the people around him, you know, the biological life forms around him. So that's why I do think it's a missed opportunity. It could have just been subtle, like a subtle continuation of this, not an actual revisiting of it.
Yeah. I mean, it could have done it with Naomi, because she was basically the similar age to Belle.
Right.
Good point.
They could have done it with that. They could have linked in that Naomi would have reminded him of Belle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or that episode when he has to go down to that planet that's spinning so fast and their time goes so much faster and he has a son. Family
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
He could have related to Naomi because her mom disappeared.
Right.
Yeah. That would have been really smart.
You know, he could have like, you know, is she in the Jeffrey's shoes with Argyle? You know, I mean, you just don't know.
She might be older having a
Naomi
party
Wildman
in there.
Is like, my life changed the day that my mom discovered that Argyle was distilling gin in the Jeffrey's tubes. I never saw her again. Sometimes when I pass by, I can hear them from the corridor.
And the drip, drip, drip of the distillery.
Yeah. The constant, never-ending reminder.
Now, but they're the Delta Quadrant. Do you think that would actually be Argyle, or is it an Argyle? Like, do all the Argyle brothers, do they get jobs as chief engineers on starships, quickly lose them, and go hide out in Jeffrey's tubes?
Yeah, I think it's a family thing.
Yeah, maybe Argyle was the prototype for the Doctor. So every ship's got an Argyle photonic life form in the Jeffrey's tubes.
Star, because of the great success of Argyle on the Enterprise D, Starfleet decided to build that into all future ships. I've been watching TNG season 1 on Blu-rays over the past week. I've had it playing pretty much constantly while I'm working, so I'm going really quickly through the season, and it's really funny to watch Argyle in these early episodes and how he's always loitering there. He's the chief engineer, but he seems like one of the really least
useless.
Important people on the ship. He's always loitering in the background of scenes, trying to do his job in engineering, but there are like four people there to help him.
Yeah, and he can't wait
and
to get back.
He's just standing
to that
around.
He lasted longer than Khan, though. Engineer Khan. Not
Genghis
Khan.
McDougal as well. All right. Well, we'll save this for our failed chief engineers of the Enterprise D show. We should really do that sometime.
Oh, well, if you're going to put failed engineers in, Geordi's going to be in there then.
Yeah.
Geordi couldn't fix Geordi didn't fix anything. Wesley fixed everything. Geordi just went up to the captain and says, I did that.
That reminds me, I had a revelation this week watching TNG season 1. I finally understand the meaning of Wesley's Technicolor sweater.
Ooh, do tell.
You know what it is?
And it is, that's right. What is it?
Well, you notice that on his Technicolor sweater, he has blue, red, and gold. He knows everything in all three divisions.
It's a rank insignia.
Yeah.
I'll be damned. They
couldn't put him in command or engineering or science because he's too smart for that. So they gave him something that had all three on it.
Oh, you're smart.
It took me all these years to figure it out. Clearly,
you are smart.
I'm not Wesley
you
Crusher.
Make
go. Say it like the pack. Let's. You're smart.
You are smart. You make us go.
Yeah. You make Trek FM go.
Yeah. We are smart also.
All right, so back to Voyager. We turned into the TNG show here for a minute. But
we did.
Back to Voyager.
Oops.
Briefly.
Yes, you went on such a big divergent, it was almost like Trek News and Views.
That's your influence on us, Colin. We digress.
I think I would be remiss in pointing out that pretty much any time B'Elanna is in a scene in this episode, I pretty much only focused on Roxanne Dawson and her braided hair. And
yes. Oh, I loved her braid. The braid was so cute.
It was.
That was great.
Roxanne always looks great, but I really like the braid. I like as the series goes on, I think they seem to do this with a lot of the actresses in Star Trek. They give her a few more feminine touches as the series goes on. You know, they especially did it with T'Pol on Enterprise, where they finally let her actually look feminine by maybe the third season. And not that B'Elanna didn't to start with, but here, like, she feels more relaxed. She feels more like a real woman here instead of this angry Klingon.
And she's deliberately winding Tom up.
Yeah.
Yes, and she's reading Klingon vigorous Harlequin paperbacks.
vigorously,
no less. I mean, did you guys see as they cut to that scene she's reading? I mean, she is just eyes locked in.
She is. That's because Klingons do have a very vigorous romantic side.
Yes.
Apparently.
And of course, Shakespeare is not Shakespeare until you read it in its true Klingon form.
Yes, apparently.
That's what I hear.
And Harlequin romance novels.
Same thing.
You've never read those until you've read them in their true original Klingon either.
Right.
So in the non-Kindle version, is there a picture of a hunk on the front that dressed in Klingon brides with a
I was just picturing that, like grocery stores on Kronos.
Yeah.
I was picturing the book rack, what the covers would look like.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's an illustration that needs to happen.
Yeah, especially having just seen Hyde and Q recently, when Q brings the Klingon woman on to entice Worf, and they have their little mating ritual on the bridge, and Worf knocks her across the bridge, and she gets really turned on by that.
Yeah, and Geordi says, is this sex?
And Worf is, this is sex.
Yeah. Because bearing in mind that's Geordi, that's probably a perfectly valid question.
Yes, he doesn't know.
No.
You know? And PDH comes out the turbo list and says, is it?
And then 30-year-old Wesley's body with, you know, 15-year-old Wesley's voice is standing there with his eyes. Ooh.
And the uniform still fits.
Yeah.
It's like the Incredible Hulk. You can grow 3 times your size and your clothes will still fit.
Amazingly so.
Yeah, the pants at least.
I picture Wesley's got a closet full of those Technicolor sweaters in different sizes.
Yeah, just opens like, the wardrobe door and goes, which shall I wear today?
Yeah.
I'll have the grey one.
Yeah.
So, any other character moments in here besides, of course, the wonderful stuff with B'Elanna? I actually found, like, I haven't watched early Voyager episodes in a while. And so when I go back and I see Kes, I always feel like I kind of miss Kes not being on the show later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's something about Jennifer Leon. She has this very soothing manner to her.
She does.
She does.
Yeah.
She does. Her voice, the way she speaks, definitely.
Right.
Yeah. She's very kind.
And it's a shame the way they got rid of her as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which we discussed on To the Journey. Shameless plug.
To the Journey.
Well, I did a shameless plug earlier, so you're entitled to.
Cool. Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Well, and you know, the other thing I noticed is Kes has always been great for the Doctor, and this comes through a little bit in this episode because she's just kind of encouraging him along. She's not judging him. She's not really giving her opinion. She's just kind of letting him figure it out as he goes along, which is very wise of her, but she is wise for her young years. And, okay, I got to make another comment here. 7 of 9 is not the only lady on the show who has worn a cat suit. Did you see this contraption that Kes is wearing in this episode? It's some kind of, it's like
what's
a cross between the cat suit and Naomi Wildman's one-piece jumpsuit.
Oh, God.
It is.
Thanks for that vision. Because I was thinking I was thinking,
a preschool cat suit.
Jennifer Leon looks good in this. They didn't really need to bring Jeri Ryan on the show because I actually prefer Jennifer Leon over.
She's perfectly sexy. What was wrong with her?
Yeah. Well, the problem with bringing Jeri Ryan on a show as well is then the second half of Voyager becomes the Dr. Janeway 7 show.
Yeah.
Right. Good. Yeah. And then opening up a whole new can of worms there.
Yeah.
I think 7 was a good addition to the show. For Janeway to have someone to play off of, and I think 7 did a lot of good stuff for the show, but I do feel like they could have done something with Kes that they didn't. I mean, I don't think that she was necessarily a failed character. They just
I felt like
didn't quite
they could
fit
have done
in
more
with the stories they wanted to tell. Yeah,
they didn't know what to do with her.
They didn't, but if they would have just thought about it for a freaking second, I mean, they could have made the relationship she had with Janeway more dynamic. And I think they should have done a lot more with Kes's lifespan being so finite. Have her go through more stages of life.
Well, that was the one problem they did have, is they set up this 9-year life and the fact that it would have been a 7-year series.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, essentially by the time they got to the end of the run, even if you just go on the 7 years of the series, then she would have been, to all intents and purposes, late middle age.
Well, she could have also been darn near dead. I mean, that was average lifespan.
Well, yeah, but you've got the precedent with the second Okonpa, who lived to be 14.
True. So who knows where she's going to go, though? That's the thing. Yeah. And wouldn't it have been interesting to see her die in Endgame? She gets this close to seeing her.
It would have been nice to see her die.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying for dramatic purposes.
Imagining all sorts of scenarios in which Kes dies in Endgame.
Well, it would have been better than what we got. So there. Anyway,
I don't know.
Let's talk about real life.
If Kes had died, that would have been yet another thing that Janeway would have been upset about.
I know.
Back in time and
she'd have to go back and
set everything right.
Something like that.
As for real life, though, earlier when we were joking, Colin, you mentioned wait for the Blu-ray release and we'll get that special ending where Tom writes the romance novel for B'Elanna. But I was thinking as I'm watching this that this is not when you think about remastering the show, this is not an episode that you think about, because primarily here you're thinking about the Doctor on the holiday with his family. But actually, this episode with the space eddies, with the shuttle, with Tom flying the shuttle in to the space eddies, this episode is going to look amazing when they remaster this for Blu-ray. Because one great thing about Voyager is that, especially from this point to the end of the series, the visual effects technology had reached a point where they could really do some great stuff on television that we didn't get in TNG for sure, and even in the first half of DS9 as well. And this is some really, really dynamic effects that go on in Voyager. And this one especially, I can't wait to see the trailer park debris, as we talked about earlier, flying around. And if we're lucky, they'll throw in a slow cow like they did in Twister.
Mr. Paris, get us out of here. Maximum warp.
Out of Guru. It's got to be a cow in the Blu-ray version.
There's
also in the Blu-ray version, there's a bit where Tom ties the shuttle to a pipe with his belt.
That could be interesting.
Yeah. And it's also the bit where Tom does surfer dude moment and all when he rides the eddies.
Oh, yeah. Tommy's definitely got that in him. Yeah.
Yeah. That's his love of the 20th century coming into the front. All he needed was the Beach Boys in the background.
Round, round, get around, I get around, yeah, get around, round, round, I get around, I get around.
Yeah, I could see that happening. Oh my gosh. I'll never look at this episode the same again. Thanks, Colin.
Oh, well.
Yeah. It's going to make this bleep. There I go, the bleep plot. I can't help myself.
You know what I love? What I love about having Char on the show is that I don't have to go through and censor things in editing because she bleeps herself.
Apparently. Well, this week.
It's almost, it lends itself to the title of the podcast as well, The Bleep Show.
The Bleep Show.
There you go.
The bleep plot.
Yeah. Well, at least this visual is going to make the B plot more interesting now.
Yeah.
Thinking about it.
It will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it'll still be rubbish.
Yeah, but it's better. I mean, just as meaningless in content, but more entertaining to watch.
Well, if it's got the flying cow and the Beach Boys track, then yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all. That's all. That's it.
Yeah. You know? And they could also, if they think about it, they could also tie in the 37s here and have a truck.
I was thinking that. You read my mind.
Tom has to drive a truck into the eddy.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
With a surfboard in the back.
And it'll start up in space, right? No problem.
Yeah. And then in the Blu-ray version, in extra scenes, there's a bit where Tom walks into the mess room and says to Neelix, I found you a cow. Cook that.
I'm going to teach you how to make hamburgers.
Yeah, and not that slop that you put on my plate at the start of the episode.
No more sloppy joes. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah,
he walks into Neelix and he says, "Beef, it's what's for dinner."
There you go. Nice little 20th century connection there. Yeah.
And he walks over to the replicator and says, 14 varieties of tomato soup? I've got a burger.
Take that.
You know, I'm pretty sure Tom drives a Chevy into an eddy. Weren't those the lyrics from Don McLean's American Pie?
Chevy to the eddy. It is now. But the eddy was dry.
See, it's becoming a musical podcast now.
Yes. Voyager the musical. It could have happened.
Oh, God.
That's a YouTube video that needs to happen. One last point I want to make about this episode was that I thought that the casting for the guest actors was pretty decent. Chris, you talked for a short moment about the Klingon kids, whatever the heck they were, kids, engaging in Andorian fight scenes.
I've been attacked by an Andorian.
But I thought that the casting of Doc's wife, Charlene, was pretty decent, but what really impressed me, actually, was the casting of Lindsay Hahn as Belle. She was in Persistence of Vision as Beatrice, but then she's again here as Belle, and I thought she did an amazing freaking job playing a little girl who dies, and I'm sorry, that's a big challenge, and she just freaking pulled at my heartstrings, and I'm sure with parents, I mean, if that were your child,
yeah,
you know, if she can make that kind of effect happen in you, then she more than did her job. That's pretty darn good for a kid actress.
Yeah.
Very talented.
They both the children actors did a good job in this, because they both switched from being sickly sweet to being the complete opposite.
Years. Glenn Harris's Jeffrey was good too.
I agree with you. Lindsay Hahn did an excellent job in this episode, and for me, I mean, the end of this episode is really difficult to watch for me now. You know, I mean, I have a daughter who's about the same age as Belle, and you can imagine, you know, I'm probably the typical father that every time my daughter does something remotely dangerous, my heart is stopping, and I'm like I want to go grab her and make sure that she never does anything whatsoever dangerous, but at the same time, I'm like, I have to let her be herself, you know, I can't overprotect her either, so. Most of the time, I stand back unless it's something that I know is like, okay, there's like a 90% chance that she's going to get really hurt in this situation.
Yeah.
But most of the time, if it's like, you know, riding the bike quickly down a slope, I'm like, well, she can ride a bike. I've got to let her ride a bike. I can't hover over her. But, you know, but you can see yourself in a situation like the doctor is in here, where some just ridiculous accident, like she bumps her head playing sports, results in some sort of hemorrhage like that. And that's a case where, I mean, the situation that was written here for the doctor, the doctor's reaction to it, everything about that I thought was very real. Mm-hmm. And this is an episode, it's a really good episode of Voyager. Forget the kind of nonsense about the B plot, but it's really good that it starts off really funny and you laugh a lot of the way through it. But then at the end, it's so heart-wrenching, and it really takes you emotionally to two extremes in the span of 42 minutes. And there aren't very many Voyager episodes that do that. And
yeah,
I think this is definitely an underrated episode.
And I'm glad he went back in and finished the program.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rather than just leave it. Because he was he was going to just leave it. But he went back
and it's a good point. I mean, one of the best parts of this episode actually is that conversation between Tom and the doctor. And Tom makes the point, like, you know, things happen in life and, you know, some of us find ourselves in sort of stalemate situations, you know, sometimes with family members where, you know, it's rather than resolve something, because it's really difficult to resolve something, you can leave it hanging for a very long time. But in the end, you kind of get stuck at that point in time. It's actually what the prophets explain to Sisko in Emissary, that he can't keep living in the moment when Jennifer is killed. Because as long as he stays in that, as long as he doesn't take the final step to resolve that, even though it's painful, like it's painful here for the doctor to go in and tell Belle that she's going to die, you're just going to be stuck in that moment in time forever. And you're never going to move forward. And I thought Tom was the exact perfect character to tell that to the doctor, because Tom explaining the whole thing about how the crew had become a family, you know, Tom is the misfit at the beginning of Voyager. You know, he's the one who Janeway has to go get him out of this penal colony, and he's the kind of he's the person who doesn't want to be there at the beginning. So for him to feel that they've all grown together as a family and to reach a point where he can go and explain this to the doctor, I thought was very effective as well.
And it was totally
one of the best scenes in the episode.
It was.
Which, not surprisingly, one of the best scenes in the episode involves Robert Duncan McNeil actually delivering some real material.
Yeah, meaningful dialogue.
He does very well.
Mm-hmm. He does.
Which brings you to the bit as well about the head injury that she had, because they never elaborate what the head injury is. So it must have been a quite severe head injury, because we know from the motion picture, the TOS movies, Chekhov falls off the Enterprise, and McCoy can cure it by putting an implant on his head and curing the blood clot. So whatever happened to her was obviously beyond medical science, even for that era.
So, yeah, true. You know, and yet they put a sponge Band-Aid on it.
Yeah, yeah. I think reminded me of Alphabet Soup for some bizarre reason.
it did kind of look like that. Like noodles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the problem was that all they had on hand were sponge bandages. And
yeah. It wasn't even glittery. Everyone knows that bandages in the future are glittery.
Glittery.
They didn't have one of those Imperial Shuttle type forehead attachments that Bones had. And,
indeed.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've been talking about real life for an hour, so let's wrap up with any final thoughts that you have about the episode, and of course, give our ratings of the episode. So, Laurie, what are your final thoughts on real life?
I like it as a doctor episode. I do wish that they would have continued some of the, like we said, the development that the doctor had experienced in the episode in the future, but as an episode in itself for the doctor, I would say it's probably one of his best, because he does really learn what real life is all about with a family and the challenges that come with that. So I guess I would give it 4 out of 5 sponge bandages. On that rating scale.
Nice.
Excellent.
I think it's pretty decent for a Voyager Season 3 episode. The Doctor's storyline it absolutely shines. There's a lot to like there. We already discussed what I think of the B plot. I just don't care. And that ruins a part of the episode for me, where I've just, honestly, while I was watching it today, I was really bored with that whole thing. Like, just get out of there already. We know you're going to live, Tom. Not a whole lot of payoff with that, and I wish there had been to have made that struggle more worth it. But everything else is pretty darn good. So I think I'm going to give this one 7 out of 10 Lost Rackets.
There you go.
All right. How about you, Colin?
The problem I have with this entire episode, apart from the fact that they never reference it again. And as we said, you know, the loss of a child would have a profound effect on anybody. So to sweep it under the carpet and never mention it again is a major problem for me, especially when you consider the fact that when the doctor falls in love with the woman who's suffering from the phage, they reference that again, yet they don't reference it. So that's a problem to me. And also the B plot to me is just stupid. You know, it's a space tornado. Space is a vacuum, so how would a tornado exist in a vacuum? You know? It's that simple. And there was no cow. So if you're not going to have a tornado with a cow, it don't count. It's that simple. So them two things aside, the supporting cast was brilliant. I don't know who did the casting, but whoever cast the children was on the money. The wife was the most sickly sweet woman you could ever meet in your life, and anyone who would be married to her would divorce her instantly. I actually found a career woman far more interesting and far more entertaining and someone I would quite happily, like, you know, talk to rather than the woman who stands there saying, "Hey, hello, sweetheart, you're the bee's knees." Because yeah, I just say, that didn't work for me. But that set aside, the touching moments, the brilliant acting, Robert Picardo, definitely on his A game. So to me, I would give these 9 Eddies.
Nice.
All right. Very good. Well, I was also disappointed that as they got caught in the wind of the space tornado, that they didn't go to blue alert, because I thought that when you got caught in space wind, you were supposed to go to blue alert. But maybe that's only if the wind is going to slam you into the surface of a planet. But was missing right there. But yeah, for me, this episode is, I was glad. I agree that the B plot is ridiculous, but I've just kind of come to expect those types of B plots in Voyager, where Janeway puts the ship into extreme unnecessary danger as they attempt to get back to Earth. And I was glad, as I said early in the show, that they at least came up with something that did tie in, no matter how vaguely it tied in, to what was going on in the A-plot this time. So I think that was kind of an improvement right there. But really for me, I mean, the heart of everything is the Doctor and his story. Of course, Robert Picardo, fantastic job, as he always does. You got great scenes for Robert Duncan McNeil in here as well. Nice moments for Cass and Bellana. And it was overall, I will say, a realistic portrayal of what it's like to try to, the day-to-day life of a real family. So I also would say that this episode of Voyager is a testament to how, of the longevity of Star Trek, and how you can watch these episodes over and over and over and over. And I know non-Trekkies think we're all kind of crazy that we watch the same episodes of a TV show more than once. And not only that, but we watch them maybe like dozens of times. But, you know, I remember when this episode first aired. This episode aired, it's the year that I got married. But this was in the spring, and I got married later that year. So at that point in my life, you know, I was still single. I was getting ready to move over here to Japan. You know, the idea of actually being a parent, of having children, of what it would be like to have a real life as a married couple was something that I couldn't really imagine yet. And when I watched this episode the first time, I took it as a fun episode for the Doctor. And haha, he has a family on the holodeck. And so, and the death of Bill at the end and the struggle that the Doctor goes through really didn't have any impact on me at that point in my life, other than, you know, it's sad that his daughter is going to die. But I mean, I'm just watching two characters on the screen. But now all these years later, you know, I'm in that situation where I have a family. Structure-wise, mirrors pretty much what we see here for the Doctor, although my children are much better behaved than Jeffrey, thank goodness. But, you know, the ending, it's almost unwatchable for me at this point, because I can just completely see myself in the same situation as the Doctor. And the fact that the same episode can have these two very different effects when I watch it so many years apart, I think speaks to the strength and the longevity of Star Trek. So I do really enjoy this episode, and I'm going to give this one 7 plates of wild mushroom pilaf.
Replicated, right?
All right. Of course replicated, but it'll be the best replicated pilaf you've ever had because Charlene took classes.
Of course.
Yeah.
She did.
She learned exactly how to talk to the replicator.
That's right. All right. Well, before we go, Laurie, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at LaurieS68, and then, of course, on To the Journey.
To the Journey!
To the Journey!
Woo!
Colin, you need something about your show that we can yell, don't you think?
No.
Fair enough.
All right, Colin, tell everyone where they can find you.
You can find me on Trek News and Views. Or
Trek
on Deck
News
8.
And Views!
Oh, wait. Trek News and Views!
Woo-woo! No?
Colin is in the house!
In the hizzy!
Actually, I just did Trek News and Views with Larry and Mario. And Mario actually commented on the fact that everyone on Trek FM seems to be nuts. So,
and? Awesome.
Yeah, so I think that summed us up in a nutshell. So.
We might be dysfunctional, but it's our dysfunctional family.
Yeah. It's a dysfunction that works.
Dysfunction function.
Yeah.
It's the Klingon influence.
Yeah, no one's Klingon. Got plastic hair, so that's always a plus.
No.
Thank goodness.
Okay. So where can people find you on Twitter, Colin?
Yeah, getting back to that, yeah. Yeah, COLMH01 is my personal account on Twitter. So, and you can find the podcast on Trek FM, Stitcher, iTunes, and Trek Radio.
It's also being broadcast by the Argus Array, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, nice. Just before the subspace Eddie rips it apart.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you.
All right, Chris. Well, that I thought was a fantastic discussion of real life, and it was a lot of fun to have both Colin and Laurie on the show. We've not had Laurie on the Ready Room except, I think, one other time.
Yeah,
it was great to have her back, and then it's always a treat when Colin can make it, so this was fantastic.
It was fun. Yeah, poor Colin, he has to stay up really, really late. Juggling Japan and England isn't too bad. England and the U.S. isn't too bad. Japan and the U.S. isn't too bad, but when we do Japan, England, and the U.S., it is just, I don't know if people realize how difficult it is sometimes to coordinate the recording of the Ready Room, but yeah.
Yeah, we straddle the world time zones to make this happen.
We really, really do. But it was fun. That's real life, by the way. That's what things are like in real life.
That's right. And Colin, bless his heart, as Laurie would say, he stayed up and braved it for us. Thank you very much for doing that, buddy.
He sure did. But yeah, it was fun to talk about real life. And, you know, one thing that we forgot to mention during the discussion, we did talk about how, you know, sappy, perfect family the episode is at the beginning and all. We forgot to mention that Potsy from Happy Days, also known as the real life actor, Anselm Williams, was the director of this episode. So I think that they did a good job of choosing someone who, came from that kind of family sitcom environment from back in the day when television was a little bit different than it is now.
Yeah, indeed. That, I think, if you're not looking, is the missing link.
It is the missing link. Of course, Joni and Chachi, they are other important links from that Happy Days chain.
Well, true, yes. But certainly Potsy definitely brought in the spirit and the attitude of those old, good old days, right? To our squeaky clean family that we saw in the beginning.
Yeah, I think he did. So that was a good choice. All right. Well, Char, let's tell everyone where to find us if they'd like to share their thoughts on today's show, on real life, or anything that we talked about in news. Maybe they want to let us know what buttons they'd like to have on their captain's chair. They can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that will come to us by email. You can also join us in our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for the Ready Room. There's one for Voyager, and you can chat with us and other listeners about anything you like. You'll also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and of course on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, Char, what if people want to find you, maybe help you bleep things on Twitter? Where should they go?
Oh, and I know that there's people out there who are more than willing to encourage me in my bleeping of things. You can definitely encourage me on Twitter. My username is OhTheProfanity. Fitting, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
But then, of course, I'm also all over the place on Trek FM, and my personal website is OhTheProfanity.com. And how about you, Chris?
Well, if you'd like to find me, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. You can also find me elsewhere on the network each week with Matthew Rushing doing The Orb, where we talk all Deep Space Nine, and also Literary Treks, where we talk Star Trek books and comics. And if you listen to this week's Literary Treks, you'll find Char with us as well. As we learn,
I'm everywhere.
You're like Jeffrey Combs.
He is everywhere.
This week I am, yeah. Right. Well, and of course you can also find me on To The Journey, where of course you can find me and then at my co-host Lori, who is on the show with us tonight, and of course the international sex symbol himself, Tristan Riddell.
The ISS, as we call him.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you'll find that. You'll find all the shows in iTunes, on Stitcher, on the website, all around. Go to trek.fm/podcasts, and you'll get a directory there with links to all the shows. We'd also like to invite you to support our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace is absolutely the easiest way to create a personal blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. Go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK5 to get 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. I promise you that you'll love Squarespace, and you'll be supporting our sponsor and helping us bring the Ready Room to you each week. Well, Char, I'm sorry. I've really got to run. I'd like to hang around and chat. You know, we're both wearing our Barrel Roll t-shirts today. And really like to hang around. But I'm late for my cooking class, so I got to run. I'm going to let you close out the show.
All right. Well, yeah, you better get going. And in the meantime, I'll help Belle find her Precy Squares racket. Don't worry about that. I've got that under control. And I think it's time to stick a ceremonial dagger into this episode, because the Ready Room is done.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die. They were singing bye bye Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing this'll be the day that I die.